I'm going to start to turn. So, my dear friend, the second part. When the first was a little negative, black science and so on, this will be, I think, nicer. So, when you hear this whole theory of evolution, and Darwin has never been without his critics, never, people often think that Darwin took a long time to be accepted. This is not true at all. He was accepted in 5 years. Because it's so evident. Of course, there were all the reservations from the Christian side, which is quite normal, because ultimately he was also saying the human being is an animal. He didn't say it in his first book because he found it so horrible, especially for his wife, who was a Christian. So he only wrote it later in another book. So he has always been criticized, but the first criticism that remains, Sri Aurobindo has also formulated. Sri Aurobindo is so full of science. If you read him with this nose, search for in his works, you will find so much. He knew so much, he foresaw so much. He says, there are missing links that always remain missing in the life divine. Now, in the latest scientists, this is exactly the same. The missing links are missing. And where before they had this tree of life, now they will do this. Because they are not sure where, when, and how it happened. They do like that. So these links remain missing. Number one, the second point is they do not know how life came about. Because first there was matter, earth, the rock, and then how did life come about on this earth? Thank you. They do not know. So for instance, Robert Shapiro, who is a scientist, has written a very good book about the origins of life, and he gives 7 theories. And the first one is the creation myth. God has created life. The plants, the animals, the human being. The second one is spontaneous generation. And one should not forget that spontaneous generation was accepted till very recently. Because quite simply they could not know how these small animals came out of that horse dung and of these bottles with these spoiled things that had been standing there for a long time. They could not, how did it happen? They could not see, they could not think that there were smaller things that caused these animals to come about. So they called it spontaneous generation. Life came about by itself. Even mice. And it is so interesting, again, as an illustration of my technology thesis, that you have 2 Galileis. The first one, Galileos, Galileo Galilei, that was his full name, but if I say Galileo, you may think of Christ. But you have 2 Galileos. The one who was the genius who invented the mechanics. And this, I won't go into it, otherwise we are here again up to 12 o'clock, was really something incredible. But the other one was technology. In Holland, they had toys. They brought the toys to Italy. Galileo being somebody who worked with his hands. Newton, somebody who worked with his hands. The theoretical physicists today do not do that. These old ones were at the same time technologists and theoretical scientists. He made a good telescope and he saw the moon. And he saw the planets of Jupiter. And he saw the faces of Venus. This was a revelation. It has nothing to do with theoretical science. It was a confirmation of a theory, but it was not something new that he expected. Second point, a little later, again in Holland, they invented the microscope. And then in the water they saw all these small animalcules. And then more and more and more and more. What a role technology has played in this science. Spontaneous generation was there when they could not perceive. It's quite simple. That is one of the reasons that Darwin could not know. And many people you can amaze and maybe get a pint of beer in a betting in a cafe when you say Darwin did not know who it came about, but he didn't know. So then you have the third one, prebiotic or primordial soup. They say it came from, they call it a soup, which is a mixture of many things. Darwin had already written in his Origin of Species, maybe somewhere there was a small pond, and with lightning or with ultraviolet rays or all that, life generated there. So now in the laboratory, I put that together, left it, lightnings. And they had some molecules. The Urey Miller experiment in 1953. And this for a long time. When I was started reading about science, I have been interested all my life, you know, you always read about the Urey Miller experiment, which had created life in the laboratory. Now it is totally discredited. The first thing, how could they know how it was life in the beginning? It is just a supposition. And the fact is that these molecules were not at all adducive to life. Not at all. Another theory was minerals. And these are the minerals of what we would call dust. And they may have been there in the sea and they may have been there somewhere else. And this may have been the origin of life. Another theory. Another theory is life comes from another planet, extraterrestrial. Sri Aurobindo has already answered. This does not change the problem. This does not change the problem of the origin of life. Whether it originated there or here, it does. And Sri Aurobindo, do you know that? has said, humankind, will always be created again, and the evolution will always be created again, because God is eternal. It is an eternal act. And what is called Earth, Bhumi, may mean anything. And he says humankind has been on many planets or life environments, the last being Mars. This is in an early text. This is at the time that Sri Aurobindo was in full discovery, the time of the record of yoga, and when he still wrote and said many things which later he wouldn't say anymore or just put in a conjunctural way. The last being Mars. But always it is going on. And the mother said, where do you put the beginning? In the year 0000, where is that year? There was no time. There is no time in the time, in the timeless. This is very... So extraterrestrial was another thing. And then you have panspermia. What is panspermia? Sperm is the things that cause life to be. Pan is everywhere. So it was like a seed in the cosmos. And on Earth it has flowered. We don't know about the others yet. And then the last one was creationism. Now, there is one thing I want to say. I am never talking here about creationism. Because this is a totally different subject. You believe, you do not believe in that, very good, And I do not mean that denigratingly, but it is something apart. You believe that the Bible literally is God's word. Creationism says that it literally is His word. But if you believe that, good for you. Here I talk about something else. So you have all the theories, and you know Shapiro, who is a very intelligent, good writing scientist, says, I have come back to spontaneous generation. Which means we cannot explain it. Now, there was a time that Sri Aurobindo, before and while he wrote the Arya, thought that the world was changing very fast. And he thought that there was a kind of infusion of the spiritual, psychic and all that in science and in everything. And through his words, every time when I read it, I write now in the margin, I surely have minimum 200 annotations about that time, that he thought, boom, it is happening. Not expecting the two world wars, the one world war that would follow before something really happened. Because that was the time of Nietzsche, it was the time of Bergson, it was the time of Spiritism. It was that time of hypnotism. It was the time of all these new engines. It was the time of the Planck discovery of radiation and all that. He said he thought it was happening at that time. He was premature. But now, after the wars have taken place, and in full flower of atheism, with Dawkins and Dennett at the head of their powers and their fame, and Sagan, something is really happening. Two things. The first one is the anthropic principle. Anthropic principle. The second one is intelligent design. And this is happening in science. So now it is not anymore from outside some crazy people who are sitting and moving tables and all this thing. It is in science. What is the anthropic principle? Anthropos, here anthropos is human. So it is quite simply that they say the evolution of the cosmos from the beginning with the Big Bang is so amazing that life has in a way been planned in it. Planned. Because if one little factor had been wrong, life would have been impossible. And these little factors are really little factors on the kind of, for instance, something like that. 10 to the minus 53rd power. This is... If something had gone a little wrong, life would never have originated. They have come to that conclusion. And what is that conclusion? It is, these are intelligent people, hyper-intelligent people, who just say, give way to their amazement of how the cosmos has evolved and that man is there. Man, a being that can reflect on the cosmos evolution and interpret it. This is amazing. To give you an idea, if protons were 0.2% heavier, they could decay into neutrons, destabilizing atoms. No life possible. If the electromagnetic force were 4% weaker, there would be no hydrogen and no normal stars, no Earth, no life. If the weak interaction were weaker, hydrogen would not exist. If it were stronger, supernovae would fail to seed interstellar space with heavy elements. We come from the stars. All the heavy elements have been, as they say in science, cooked in huge explosions of the stars, the force necessary to make these nuclear elementary particles stick. if the cosmological constant were larger, the universe would have blown itself apart before galaxies could form. This is only a little thing of a whole list. There are so many constants in the world, the Planck constant, the cosmological constants, all these constants, which are, they have found out in their calculations, have no justification of being that crazy thing of something like that, or then something like 00071. Why? Nobody knows. All these numbers. You can find something in it about it in Savitri. In Savitri, you just do a search and you write number, and you will have all the extracts where Sri Aurobindo says how the cosmos was formed by number and form. Because according to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, on all these levels they are demiurges, creators. And number and form are at the foundation of mathematics. So that is Platonic in the highest degree. Plato, who said, you know, this has been created with forms. Above his academy was written, nobody should enter here who doesn't know geometry. And then you have always, you read about mathematics, and you may be sure to find a paragraph to say how beautiful a formula is. Now they don't use beautiful anymore, they use the word elegance. They are always amazed about the simplicity and the beauty of all these things that hang together. And there in Savitri you have these verses, these lines where Sri Aurobindo said, everything was made according to number and form. This is also Sri Aurobindo. So there are so many things, and you have two kinds of anthropic principles. You have actually five, I give only two. The weak principle is, if any of the major constants of the universe were different, we would not be here. Life would not have evolved. Our life is dependent on the world being exactly as it is. The universe is fine-tuned for love, for life. That's your fault. Then you have the strong anthropic principle. The universe contains within itself the potential for life, and it was therefore impossible for human life not to have created, to have been created in this world. Scientists speaking like that. This is, of course, something that is unheard of, unexpected, and that is fiercely fought by many other scientists. Life, formation, prevision, plan, that is not science. That is imagination. The greatest scientists going against each other. And the strange thing is that the weak principle was formulated by Steven Weinberg. And Steven Weinberg was one of these hard-nosed physicists who wrote, the more I learn about the cosmos, the more I am convinced of the absurdity of the whole thing. And he came up with the anthropic principle. Then we have intelligent design. So number one, no creationism. Intelligent design, which means there is a design in things and it is meaningful. In a way, we are not defining. Who has brought this up? Scientists. Great biologists. So intelligent design means quite simply that things are too complicated to evolve according to the Darwinian theory, by chance. Boom. One mutation at a time. They say almost everything in life is so complex that it doesn't work if not everything works together. Here I come with my bombardier beetle. It's a very beautiful beetle. Just by chance, when I was planning this thing, it was shown to me by one of the synchronicities, you know, on TV, the bombardier beetle. Beautiful beetle, brownish child, and then orange, light brown head like that. Why is it called the bombardier beetle? Well, head, you know. It has in its body two compartments. And one compartment contains something that has to make the other one neutral, which is hydrogen peroxide. And hydrogen peroxide explodes. And the man who made that program on the Discovery Channel showed with a bottle of hydrogen peroxide what an effect it has. This is kept here to make that it does not explode. So when the bombardier beetle is threatened, it turns its rear to the attacker and gives him the full broadside. Yeah, but how is that possible? Because, not that he does that, but that it has come about. If this here, this compartment is planned, it must have in mind, by way of speaking, in mind, that. This is not Darwinism. In Darwinism, gradually things come about. Here there is a plan. Where there is a plan, there is a design. And of course, the whole thing is much more complex than that. You do not only have these two things, you also have the whole mechanism, the sphincter and everything that makes it possible to eject that so that it does not explode in the body of the beetle, and that it is directed in the right. It is extremely complicated. To make that, it is like a mousetrap. And the mousetrap is the most common example in that literature. You have your piece of wood, platform. You have what I call the hammer. You have a spring. You have something that keeps this from springing. Every part alone is worthless. They can only work all together. They can only work all together. They can only work in the flagellum. Another example, these are examples made by big, great scientists. Another one is the flagellum of the bacteria. And what is the flagellum of a bacteria? Well, you have these small boats, you know, when they are paddling like that. The bacteria have a flagellum to paddle. What does that mean? A bacterium is enclosed. It needs a mechanism to make that something can go through its skin. It needs to make that. It needs a motor, literally, that makes that flagellum move in all directions. This cannot evolve step by step. So you see, this is what intelligent design is about. And the people, most of them, who bring this forward in science, within science, are saying very clearly, please note that we do not know, that we do not say, that we do not define what this intelligence is. Everybody draws his conclusions, thinks what he wants, but it is not possible that this happens according to Darwinian, neo-Darwinian evolutionary theories. That is a great discovery. And when William Dembski writes somewhere, I think it is the greatest discovery of recent time, I think he is right. So you see Sri Aurobindo before the Arya, and now how these things come up. They are openings. Let's call them openings. Openings with possibilities to something else. I read the bombardier beetles by somebody who formulates it much better than me. His name is Brachinus in Latin, commonly known as the bombardier beetle. I find this such a nice name, you know. Squirts a lethal mixture of hydroquinone and hydrogen peroxide into the face of its enemy. And the man who gave the demonstration says, my God, it burns. These two chemicals, when mixed together, literally explode. So in order to store them inside its body, the bombardier beetle has evolved a chemical inhibitor to make them harmless. Has evolved? What does that mean? At the moment the beetle squirts the liquid out of its tail, an anti-inhibitor is added to make the mixture explosive once again. That's a very complicated mechanism. The chain of events that could have led to the evolution of such a complex, coordinated and subtle process is beyond biological explanation on a simple step-by-step basis. The slightest alteration in the chemical balance would result immediately in a race of exploded beetles. So, and then one of the scientists gives the definition: a biological system is irreducibly complex, unexplainably complex, when its operation requires the cooperation of numerous parts, none of which perform a useful function unless all are present and functional together. This is there. At the moment, there are openings based on scientific grounds. Then what does Sri Aurobindo say? Where are we? Well, surely we are with intelligent design. So this idea of writing a book and giving this talk which comes from that material about it is quite simply that I would like all my Aurobindonian brothers and sisters to have the arguments when they talk to outside people, which is the aim of the University of Human Unity. So Sri Aurobindo gives a theory of spiritual evolution. And he says the theory of spiritual evolution is not identical with the scientific theory of form evolution and physical life evolution. It must stand on its own inherent justification. It may accept the scientific account of physical evolution as a support or an element, but the support is not indispensable. And it can accept the scientific explanation when it suits together with the spiritual evolution, which by itself demands an evolution of science. Now, Sri Aurobindo has written several times about the science of the future. The science of the future will go towards total reality. Remember in the beginning, reality. Total reality, material, vital, mental, and above. We are at the material level. How can you define a vital science? Because vitalism is a dirty word for material scientism. Mysticism is a dirty word, vitalism is a dirty word. But it will only be when the whole reality is together included. This may still take some time. Another very important fact with Sri Aurobindo is that he has a kind of crescendo of the evolution. Crescendo, matter takes a very long time, vital accelerates shorter time, mental can think things out shorter time, and we are at the time now of this incredible acceleration of history. I personally, of course, I don't say that I am completely normal, but I think I feel so much the speed of the time that is now going by. I am 73 now. You know, you have to take into account the years still remaining and what has gone by. It's just like that. We are living in a time warp. And this is the time warp of the action of the supramental, its influence on history now. So What will happen? Anything is possible. Then there is another thing with Sri Aurobindo. If you say, what did he actually mean? First of all, Sri Aurobindo knew science so well. This does not mean that he would solve the equations of quantum mechanics, but he knew science so well, he knew Vedic science so well and all that. But then you say, you take his last great statement. His last great statement, Savitri. What do you read there? First of all, evolution is a fact. It's full. Second point is, humankind is part of the evolution. When Savitri also awoke among these tribes, he says, you know, humankind part of the evolution. Then he describes the world state. Matter, chain of being, described from experience, which does not exist anywhere else. And that is the spiritual reality. But he also says very concrete things. Does he accept the Big Bang? A gas belched out from some invisible fire. Of its dense rings were formed these million stars. So that fire, as I have already said on another occasion, is Agni, an invisible fire. And Agni, it is a fact that Agni is the basis of forms, as the Sankhya has pointed out long ago. This means the fiery principle in the three powers, radiant, electric and gaseous, the Vedic trinity of Agni, is the agent in producing liquid and solid forms of what is called matter. He writes in one of his letters. Then he himself says the all-shaping fire. Big Bang? Fact. According to Sri Aurobindo and Savitri. And then, he has some other lines. For long ago, Earth's solid vest was forged. Earth's solid vest. By the technique of the atomic void. Ah, what is that? And I have two explanations. Which I do not mean are correct. And there may be something totally different. Vladimir may give a totally different explanation. The number one is to create something material, the one had to make space in himself. Because he is absolutely fullness. He is absolute fullness. He is the pleroma. So he had to create a void to give place to the ether and give shape to the manifestation. That is one explanation. Another explanation is that now, according to quantum mechanics, it is possible from the void that something comes about. Particles come about from the void by positive and negative fields, which are temporarily created. Some may subsist, others disappear again into the void. This is a quantum mechanic theory. That fundamental about reality says nothing, that says everything mathematically. So you see there are possibilities. For long before Earth's solid vest was forged by the technique of the atomic void, and he says out of the voids, unseen energies, inventing the scene of a concrete universe. This is exactly what I come to say on both accounts. You have to put them together into something else. Because in one of his thoughts and aphorisms, Sri Aurobindo has said, there was a time that I say that the sun turned around the earth. Then I said that the earth is turning around the sun. Neither is true, he says. Both are moving in a third reality. He doesn't formulate these last things like that. So according to Sri Aurobindo, he always goes back to magic, miracle. And strange to say, you find this more and more with the most open scientific writers. So it's quite an adventure to go through science. You always have to see whom you are reading, in what context they are writing, and in what context they are thinking. But Sri Aurobindo, if you read Savitri, you will find magic on every page. It is quite simple. He says the infinite has made itself finite. This is the ultimate act of Maya, magic, mating, measuring, out, forming. And then there is one scientist, Robert Koons, who writes the following. In the intelligent agency case, we face the difficulty that the agent involved would enjoy intellectual powers at least many orders of magnitude above our own. If you read a little about the subatomic particles, quantum mechanics, if you read a little about the unbelievable, irreducible complexity of a cell, and you realize that in our body we have 100 trillion trillion cells, and then you realize that the whole world consists of all these particles even shooting in hearts through me and through us at this moment, who is directing that concert? Because a concert it is. The forms are there, so it is not chaos. And this is something important. When one reads about science, one also always finds as illustrations simplified schemes. The hydrogen atom. And then a part of a cell, or a cell. But this always excludes the realization of the enormity of these trillions, quadrillions of cells and subatomic particles. And that, for instance, an atom of iron or of uranium is so much more complex than a hydrogen atom. They cannot even calculate it with the most advanced calculators, computers at the moment. It is so much so, and this man has realized that, you know, that the agent involved would enjoy intellectual powers at least many orders of magnitude above our own, and must have employed means of a kind that we can barely imagine. This barely is a softening, it should be that we cannot imagine at all. In addition, we have little idea of the scope of the agent's activity. What we see in terrestrial biology may only be a small part of a much larger design, whose ultimate purpose is beyond our ken. This is written by a scientist. We know what can do that. We cannot imagine it, we cannot realize, but we know, we are told that something like that exists, and that of course is a supermind. And it is like Sri Aurobindo has written so nicely everywhere, behind all manifestations stands the supermind. Otherwise it simply couldn't be there, because, and it is the huge complexity comes from there and is upheld by that. So you see, science has openings at the moment. They are severely fought by others who remain there, because if they lose their material standpoint, they lose the reason of which they have been living for many years, in which they have been teaching, for which they have got money, have kept up a family, and so on. They cannot say just like that. Like I said when I talked about Hitler, people after the war in Germany could not just cut and say this was bad. They were living in it. They had been living in it and for it. The same is with science there. And then there is the last point. We will make it today, hooray. Evolution and the human species. Are we descendants of the primates? Now, it is science to say, no, we are brothers. You have here the chimpanzee and the bonobo, and we are here, we come from a common ancestor. And here you have then the orangutan. This is what I say now. The modern theory will not put it otherwise. And it is a very strange thing, I think, that is, they say, you know, there are the typal worlds. This is Sri Aurobindo's word for the worlds there. You have all these worlds which he climbed up. Lower vital, higher vital, lower mind, higher mind, and so on and so on. All these worlds exist, he has described it. Then you have the earth. And the earth is in evolution. It is building up something like that. Because the divine has come to build up itself again. To see itself, to enjoy itself, the great ecstasy of evolution. Matter, we are at vital, we are at mind, and now we are going up. Now, they say, every time something comes here, it comes also from there. On the one side you have the inconscient earth. But the inconscient, and Sri Aurobindo has written it so often, the inconscient is everything, it is infinite. It is the divine itself, in its black mode, negative mode. So there is one power here. But the evolution can only take place when something from here inserts itself in the ladder of evolution. So, when man came about, it was not a monkey that became human. And Sri Aurobindo has formulated that so clearly. It was the aspiration of the evolution in higher monkey-like, primate-like beings that called for the descent of the mind. And a power is always a being. And a being is always a power. And there you have the incarnation of these beings. Am I fantasizing? Let me illustrate. Sri Aurobindo has said that every new species that appeared on Earth was the result of an involution. Consequently, there has always been the combination of the two, evolution and involution. There is a descent and identification of beings, a descent into conscious beings, individualities, in the forms produced by the evolution. What happens is a unification of beings from the higher regions and forms that have been evolved. And the identification takes place of the immanent divinity and the descending being. The identification of the immanent divinity, which is immanent in the whole of evolution, and the descending being. This is the mother speaking. Then she says, when the mind descended on the earth, between the moment when the mind manifested in the earth atmosphere and the moment when the first being appeared, mental being, something like a million years have gone by. I think that normally people are not aware of this kind of thing here. Because it's so important to know that because of what is happening now. We are a species always has its ceiling. And the avatar has to come to take up the species and pierce the ceiling, break through it to make that possible. Because the species itself cannot do it. If a superior creation is intended, then certainly it is not out of man that a new grade or type or pattern can develop. Not out of man. For in that case there would be some race or kind or make of human beings that has already the material of the Superman in it. It must be there to come out. Just as the peculiar animal being that developed into humanity had the essential elements of human nature already potentially or present in it, there is no such race, kind or type At most, there are only spiritualized mental beings who are seeking to escape out of the terrestrial creation. He says the species is limited. There is an aspiration, but the thing comes from above, wakes it up, and takes it a step farther. When the mother in the yoga of her last years, when she was going through that whole process, and she would say, now we know that it is possible because it has been done. In whom had it been done? In Sri Aurobindo and in her. What had happened? The psychic being, not the soul, the psychic being, because the psychic being is a being, an evolutionary being around the divine spark. The psychic being takes shape throughout all our lives. So he says here, it may happen now because there is in humanity the aspiration in a few beings who are making that which is ready, and it is, as the mother has said in the last years of her yoga, the psychic being that when matter is subtilized or divinized or changed, this matter about which we have been talking from the beginning, when this has changed, the beings can come in all and take the shape materially in what we have realized throughout the lives, through our companionship, the fellowship of the Aurobindonian ring, to create a new being. It's a very important thing, of course, which maybe you have seldom heard up to now. So we are in that. We are in that adventure. And you see, from the beginning, I had to go so fast, because in this talk there is material enough for 15 books about matter, about this, about that, the science of today, Darwinism, Neo-Darwinism. These are all great adventures. And one can only have, like Sri Aurobindo had, great admiration, and like the mother had, great admiration for all the people who have dedicated their lives in whatever way, in a materialistic way, a scientific way, or whatever, to the evolution of knowledge. As Rod said during the interval, they all work for it. It's like Orville, the mother, has said, even the ones who work against will still be working for it. It's the same with everything, because evolution is the general fact. There is only that. It's the evolution of the earth. We are the sons and daughters of the earth. In us, the earth evolves. So, these are all very important things. I hope I have just pointed out a few of them. They all hang together, especially if one has the view of Sri Aurobindo. It all hangs together. It all makes sense, because there is only that, and that always makes sense. This is the great vision that one assimilates from the writings, and the great ecstatic thing of having a meaning, having a sense, having a job to do in life, however far we may get. And I consider myself always as an absolute beginner, but we have the joy to participate. So that child asked to the mother, Mother, can we now make this supramental? They said, no, you cannot. This cannot be done by you. Sri Aurobindo has written very often, the sadhana cannot be done by you. It's the mother in you who has to do the sadhana. Because we are egos, more than we may be realized, in all parts of our being, material ego, vital ego, mental ego, and ignorant. This thing can only be done by the great Shakti who incarnated in the mother. But the mother said to that child, you know, now there is a difference. You can collaborate. This is, of course, exactly what Sri Aurobindo says, to make that ready for the other being to come in. To come in. And here we come again with that Amshan. Amshan is a part. Oh my. Amshan is a part Sri Aurobindo called Christ an Amshan avatar, a partial avatar. And Nolini, I remember very clearly in one of his writings, says everyone here has his Amshan, whether he realizes it or not. What does that mean? We are all aspects of the One. And we all have something special to do. And that special is that power, Amshan, that is always a being. So for the supramental beings to come, there has to be a readiness in a few, an elite, and then the Amshan will come and take over the work. It's an incarnation. That is what he is writing, and what I am trying to say. If I am wrong, you always have the text to go back to. I am very happy that you let me come here to rant a little. And thank you so much for your patience and your kind attention. All the very best to you.